This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Scientists warn climate change, pollution, and grabbing everything for ourselves is driving life into a sixth mass extinction event. But millions of people reject that future. They rebel against extinction. In the little English town of Stroud, a group of activists provided the spark that lit up activism around the world. We reached out to one of the co-founders of Extinction Rebellion, Skeena Rathore. Skeena is a dynamic person with multiple skills to help us heal and perhaps heal the planet. She works with trauma and growing our minds. She raises protests, but she raises media awareness and without anger. Instead, Skeena helps Extinction Rebellion with a vision that includes everyone that comes from the heart. From the UK, Skeena Rathore, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Real pleasure and a privilege to be speaking with you.
When the pandemic first came, you accepted the need for a pause to mass public actions for health reasons. But, Skeena, can we lose any more time while the planet burns and drowns and melts? How can climate action go forward?
I really appreciate your framing of the time and its relationship with what's needed now. And yes, that this is an emergency with urgency. Every day things get so much worse. And I am imagining that actually we need to slow down. Slow down. Because I think the crisis, Alex, is the climate emergency lives between us. The climate crisis lives in our relationships. What is the climate crisis is something I've really been, with many others, you know, asking. Because I think for any crisis, one has to say, well, where and why and how and who, right? Where does this come from? How has it become our reality? In thinking about that, I think what's taken me, and I think that there's a growing movement of people who are recognizing that this is about the crisis of relationship. This is the crisis of disconnection. This is the crisis of dehumanization. This is the crisis of the collapse of our interconnectedness, our interbeing, our, you know, those wonderful words that many wisdom traditions hold as sacred and with reverence, right? So that place of the essentiality of deep and adaptive relationship between each other, that's really slowing. That needs to be in relationship. One has to cultivate the conditions that aren't of urgency, that they're of spaciousness, they're of listening, they're of loving. That comes from a very different energy than that idea that there's a fire, there's an emergency, and we have to run like hell to collect the buckets and put the fire out. And it's not either or. There is an emergency, but I think there's something about collecting ourselves together, taking a deep breath, looking into one another's eyes and saying, what do we do? What do we do before we do the running?
Well, I like what you just said, that really the climate crisis is a crisis in relationships, because I think there's a tendency to think, well, this is a technical problem. We'll just switch all of our gas engines over to electric engines and we'll continue to just run over the rest of nature. And the relationships we have are between ourselves, between people in other countries, people of all races, and the Aboriginal people. So all of those relationships, that's the climate crisis. And until we address that, we're really not going to change enough to save things.
Yes, and part of that is this removal from the relationships with all sentient beings and all you know, the elemental life force, the what we are with the more than human and the other than human. There's something to shift here around our anthropocentrism, you know, our insistence around human superiority and our dominance, our dominating nature that has been these thousands of years. So in that, there's something to find around humility and a returning, a remembering our relationship and how we depend on the many relationships that are in deep, you know, in our deep ecology. We are just part, right, of a great web of life, a great ecosystem. And I think that's connected to that we've been able to other and create whiteness supremacy and Western supremacy. Those two are related.
Well, let's get down to earth in a sense of asking, how big is Extinction Rebellion?
Well, it fluctuates, Alex. You know, there have been, in our peak, certainly we have had, been in 81 countries with over 1,200 groups, 1,200 affinity groups, we call them, or affinity networks. It ebbs and flows, as any movement does. You know, Extinction Rebellion lives in the hearts of many. This is how I feel it. You know, we have a no. For many of us, we're discovering a no. We're discovering what the harm that we want to be upstanding to and say, no, we do not consent to this harm. And I think Extinction Rebellion has caught fire in a way of the heart catching fire. And so you don't necessarily, what I'm saying is, I think many, many people have a relationship with Extinction Rebellion, aren't necessarily active in groups.
Millions of people watched you go through attacks by Rupert Murdoch's attack dog, Piers Morgan, on ITV, and they just want people to be quiet while the wrecking goes on. Where do you find the patience? I mean, that's the thing that's really impressed me. I've watched quite a few of your videos and talks, and you have patience for people who are supposedly on the other side or who have different views. Where do you find that?
Thank you, Alex, for asking that question in a way that feels born of relationship. And I think that is the point, that really it's more than patience. I actually have some compassion. If, you know, honestly, I feel that as a trauma therapist and someone that's been inquiring into what our disconnection and disassociation is, and how is it that we can stand in front of another human being and be in attack? How does one get to that point where there's not enough feeling for the other's well-being, the other's heart, the other's soul, the other's life force? How does one get to that? Well, you get to that because you are in pain. There's some level of fight in you that is trying to escape this pain that you're in. Really, I have great compassion for who and how that manifests. And I certainly also have a place of stop, no more. But I essentially, I think we need to meet. There is no other, Alex. You know, there is no other. We are, you know, if you do accept that we are interdependent life beings, then there is some form of oneness between us, then, you know, it's seeing the other as your other self, as some, you know, I'm so blessed to be in relationship with some Indigenous elders as part of a global community of Indigenous wilderness eldership. You know, the greeting is, hello, my other self. You know, shalom, salam, hello, my other self. It's that part of me that wants to really see and meet the heart of the other rather than the pain of the other.
But you say we live in, quote, a systematic anti-life project. Could you talk to us more about that?
So there's, you know, I would like to say a story, and you can look at the origin of Homo sapiens and think about what has happened to us that we could get to this. And when I say this, I'm talking about that anti-life project. I'm talking about systems that have been designed and have proliferated and govern our way of being in the world and our way of working and our way of interrelating and our way of organizing. And those systems have been designed in the image of a war and domination paradigm. And you could also talk about patriarchal culture here. You could talk about colonization as a culture. And where has that come from? And so here's one story, Alex, that I think is a piece of the puzzle. How did we get here? How did we design such violent systems? And how are we in these cycles of harm that are anti-life? Well, I think something happened to the mothering principle. And I think when mass colonization took place, we moved away from matrifocal and matricultural ways of being. And by the way, when I say matri, I do not mean an inversion of patriarchy. That's not what I'm talking about. And it never was that. It never has been that, and it still isn't that. Many Indigenous cultures are still organized around a principle of matri focality or matri culture. And when you remove a mother and child from the maternal home, a matriarchal organizing way of organizing and living together, when you make a mother alone, when you make a child alone, and when you remove them from the earth, which is what happened over, you know, some thousands of years, maybe 8,000 to 6,000 years ago, and this is according to research by some women's studies across some universities, a few universities across the world. What happens to our felt sense is trauma. What happens to the young baby, the baby, is that the baby is removed from attachment that secures a sense of safety, that secures a sense of the needs being felt and met. You know, what a baby learns, instead what we've learned generally in the Western paradigm particularly, is a felt sense of scarcity and a felt sense of separation and a felt sense of powerlessness. Psychologists call it hopelessness and helplessness. And you know, attachment theory abounds as to, you know, what style of attachment are we suffering from? Mostly suffering, where we're in a mass suffering, because we don't feel a sense of abundance. We feel a sense of scarcity. We don't feel a sense of togetherness and connection. We've got mass separation anxiety, and we don't feel powerful. We feel powerless, and then we've designed systems from those feelings that dominate our very being. And man generally have designed systems in that. And so we've been able to design destructive systems, systems that cause harm and systems that separate us even further, systems that don't respect the sanctity of life, that don't respect the interrelational aspects of life, the interdependence. And that's where we are. And that's what I mean by a systematized anti-life project.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. Get all our previous programs at our website, ecoshock.org. This is Radio EcoShock with our guest, Skeena Rathore from Extinction Rebellion. In 2019, you appeared with Kelly Tatum in the program Climate Change in the Multiverse, and when asked, you said, quote, "My heart is grieving and celebrating. My heart is expecting something." End quote. So how is your heart now, 2 years and a pandemic later?
What a precious question. How is my heart now, 2 years? Well, we've just celebrated our three-year anniversary of Extinction Rebellion. We celebrated, some of us celebrated in my home, actually, here in Stroud. And I think we've reached a crossroads. My heart is in a new grieving. My heart's in a letting go. I think even 2 years ago, Alex, I thought that with enough togetherness and enough felt sense of grief, the grief and the longing, enough vision, you know, imagining and longing towards that imagining, with enough deep collaboration, and just in enough local power, you know, really creating localized power, I thought there was still space for mitigation, I think, or some like emergency stop button. You know, I think I was in some kind of, I feel somewhat embarrassed, if I'm honest, that I, and not, because as a mother of three girls, you know, you'll do anything, and you want life for them. You know, you just, and I have nieces and nephews and all the many babies I've held, because I've worked very much with young children and babies for a lot of my life in my work. But I am in a letting go. I am in a letting go of, I don't think we're going to be able to keep temperature rises under 3 degrees. I can't see scientifically how we would do, or, you know, theoretically, scientifically, practically, all of those ways. I can't see how we would do it. And so I'm in new bouts of grief, and I'm deep in inquiry and deep in new relationships around something we're calling as a kind of holding phrase of being the change work. Because in this moment now, who can we be as humanity, as humans, with the great beings that we are, with the great hearts that we have? How much can we expand to meet this moment? And we can still have a moment that where we flower into loving like crazy. What I call it, loving like we've never loved before. And it doesn't have to be a violent ending for humanity. It doesn't have to be that. And I'm very deeply committed to that type of mitigation now, that mitigating for the violence that, you know, is still within us, is still around us, we are still part of, that we are still being, and interrupting it, disrupting that violence in all the dimensions that it operates in, and creating, in recovering our love body, as my brother calls it, and recovering enough, recovering our nervous systems and our heart capacities enough to, for our children, right? For children of all species, a moment, just to be able to have a moment that isn't utterly horribly, well, violent. And that word again, you know, I still have fear. I'm still scared of extreme violence taking hold of us, but I'm committed to interrupting that.
Yes, it's wild that some authorities and media keep wanting to paint violence on climate protesters who have been dedicated to peace for so long. And I think obviously it's a projection of the violence in society, the militarism, the police action, the now vigilante action in the United States with all the guns there, so that we are swimming upstream, because leaks from inside big tech and media confirm they make lots of money by promoting division in society, and people get angry at their keyboards and angry at their screens and their phones, and meanwhile these billionaires get rich. But I like your vision, because we could do so much good if we work together with good hearts. We could take down this fear machine.
Yes, we could. So the thing is, you know, we are that fear too, you know, that's why we're on our screens, and that's why we're behind screens, and we're in cars, and all the things that are keeping us from one another and keeping us from the earth. We need to work out our belonging to each other again. We need each other. Our nervous systems need, it's a biological imperative, right? For my nervous system to be in relationship with another nervous system, and also with the Earth's nervous system. Really, the work is to leave those mechanisms of disconnection. Leave the table. Leave your table. Leave the desk, you know. Let's come back to one another. Let's come back to sharing a different table, food. Tables of food. Let's come back to looking at the sky and the stars together around the fire. Let's come back to telling one another stories, to singing and dancing and playing together. Let's come back to climbing trees and really looking and listening to all, to nature. Nature means all that is born. Let's listen and remember and relate again. And that's the vision I'm holding. I'm seeing, I think there's new language to find. I'm seeing something become global. And what I mean by that is our radically localized places of belonging and community, where there is communion with all that is alive. There we are repairing our soils and our water cycles, where the air is clean and the skies are clear, and we are sharing food that we've grown, and we are decolonizing our education, and we are, the whole new way of becoming, being in education. Our systems, our energy system, our food security and our water security, we're arranging that all locally. But we're doing it locally. We're doing it at a global level too. That's my vision, Alex, in briefly.
It's a wonderful vision, and we are short of them. And I find myself keep wanting to say, but look, the COP just failed, or look, it's more polluted in India and Pakistan than it's ever been, or look. So even as you come up with, I think, a workable, sane vision, there's something in my brain that says it can't work. And so I don't know, we have to overcome this sense of doom before we can build anything, I guess.
Well, why can't it work, Alex? What's in the way?
Well, it seems like we're in the way. We think that rich people are in the way, but most of us aren't willing to give very much up either. We're going to take holidays in Spain and just enjoy life until it all falls apart.
Yes, so there's a body of work that I'm developing. You're quite right. It's only ourselves, isn't it? It's not. We're really good at outsourcing, and you know, this blaming, shaming culture is part of this conditioning, right, that the war and domination paradigm creates in order to keep the Enlightenment and modernity, the Western project going. We have to other and divide and conquer. And there's a whole caste system, you know, of value of human beings and life forces. And so it's really easy. In that paradigm, it's really easy for us to say, oh, let's go to COP and beg for more. Or let's go to G7, which is what we've done. Or let's do another, you know, gluing ourselves outside Parliament let's create another strategy for mass NVDA that might tip the prisons into overwhelm. And all the time that we spend doing that, and it's not that the no and the disobedience isn't really important, because it is, it's really important. But there's so much we could do at being the change ourselves. And that's what we've invented, a body of work called co-liberation. We've developed a body of work called co-liberation. And in that work, we're looking at what's in the way. We're naming what's in the way within us and between us, systemically and biospherically and also neurospherically in five dimensions. And we're looking at four pathways of how we become the vision. How do we become a regenerative presence on Earth? So we're identifying the how. And we're really excited, Alex. We're really excited about bringing the work of co-liberation into the world.
Any other chatter to bring us from the celebration of 3 years of Extinction Rebellion? I mean, you're right there with a group of people who have worked this for a while. Some of my listeners are hearing about it, perhaps even for the first time, although I think most of us have heard of Extinction Rebellion. But we need to get to the heart of it and to imagine the people who are sparking this. Any ideas for us?
Sparking? Tell me what you mean by sparking this.
We got the original ideas, I think some of them from Greenpeace, of we'll do really inventive actions, we'll get some media attention and hopefully get other people thinking about these things. Now you've talked about a new strategy that goes beyond that and goes in some different directions from that. Who else are you working with? What else is being discussed at your level?
Well, you know, one of the many blessings of these last 3 years are the number of people we've been able to meet who, I would say, occupy a place of visionary leadership and visionary cultures and regenerative cultures. What many of us are doing is wanting to bring that together as much as possible for the deep collaboration to occur between the vision, you know, visionary leadership, visionary elders, together with the wisdom of indigenous communities across the world who know all about relationship and how to come into that place of union enough for life to be, you know, able to flourish. Ancient wisdom traditions also, you know, carry some of that gold that we need. I feel a golden shadow for us, Alex. I feel like if I look at the many beautiful and brilliant minds and hearts that I've met these last 3 years, really the work is just making the connections and trusting that what we're bringing to each other, and if we can really honor one another's work and lean and in towards and support that which resonates, because it is about the flourishing of love, you know, it resonates enough, or we know enough that it can cause flourishing. That's what we're doing now. And I think that there are many aspects of being that work in terms of radically localizing our lives.
Well, we're running out of time. Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
I think I would just say we can adapt, but the transformative adaptation, deep adaptation, great adaptations are possible, and it could be much simpler and easier and more convenient than having to think about global policies and carbon capture schemes. Much simpler and easier for all of us, and that lean into your local community, recreate those relationships, have those crisis talks, co-liberate together, co-liberate and adapt because you can, and you are brilliant enough and bold enough and courageous enough and heartful enough to do it.
From the UK, we have been speaking with Extinction Rebellion co-founder, local politician and thought leader Skeena Rathore. Connect with the worldwide movement at www.rebellion.global and learn more in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Skeena, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much, Alex. Many blessings for your work. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.